Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and opposition leader Peter Dutton are making a last-ditch effort to win over voters, with just one full day of campaigning left before Australians head to the polls. Today, Friday, both leaders are making a high-speed blitz across key marginal seats in a final bid to shore up support. Mr. Albanese has already campaigned in Western Australia and South Australia, is aiming to visit every corner of the country. Meanwhile, Mr. Dutton is focused on flipping key battleground electorates, sweeping through 28 marginal seats this week in an attempt to build momentum for Election Day. The coalition is hoping discontent over the cost of living and energy prices could tip the balance in tightly contested areas. Polling booths open tomorrow, Saturday 3rd May, between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. local time. Iron ore giant Rio Tinto says it's committed to remedying the past after it's criticised for failing to modernise an agreement with traditional owners. Rio Tinto pledged to reform its business practices after it blew up a 46,000-year-old Juncan Gorge rock shelters in Western Australia in 2020 for an iron ore mine. The event sparked public outrage and led to a government inquiry and the exit of the company's chair and chief executive. At Rio Tinto Perth annual general meeting, a spokesperson from Robe River Karuma Aboriginal Corporation said the group had yet to update its agreement with the traditional owners. Also at the meeting, shareholders rejected a review to consider unifying the company's dual listings on stock exchanges in London and Sydney. A 25-year-old man is set to be sentenced at Newcastle Supreme Court today for brutal 2022 murder of his ex-girlfriend while on parole for previous domestic violence offences. Against Mackenzie Anderson, Tyrone Thompson attacked the 21-year-old, stabbing her 78 times in a two-minute frenzy using two kitchen knives. He pled guilty to the murder in April, avoiding trial. In a letter to the court, Thompson said he loved Miss Anderson and never planned to hurt her. He's claiming he lost control during an argument after being cut with a knife. The Greens have rejected a proposal to penalise the opposition has called vexatious cultural heritage claims if the coalition wins Saturday's election. Coalition Indigenous Affairs spokesperson Jacinta Price has told Sky News she wants a national register of interest for cultural heritage to penalise claims considered frivolous. But Greens Senator Dorinda Cox says there is no merit to the idea. The senator has told NITV her party intends to advocate for truth and treaty during the next parliament.
We want to make sure that everybody, especially mob in this country, know that we are committed to truth and justice. And the only way that we're going to stop the misinformation of all of the stuff that's currently happening in the culture wars that are being stoked by the coalition are absolutely about truth telling. It is this particular time we absolutely need truth telling. And when then we move on to agreement making, to treaties in this country, so that we can have peace, we can have healing, and most of all, we can have First Nations justice.
Richard Marles has called for calm amongst voters and volunteers amid concern of rising tensions at polling booths across the country. The Deputy Prime Minister has cited homophobic comments made by member for Bennelong Jerome Laxall's father this week as an example of what he says has been increasingly hostile campaign atmosphere. Mr. Marles says, told Channel 9, it is unacceptable comments.
Jerome, our member for Bennelong, has dealt with it. It was unfortunate, but he's dealt with it. But I think what we have seen on polling booths across the last 2 weeks is a level of combativeness that I've not seen before. And, you know, it's not healthy. Obviously, it's not very pleasant if you're one of the people handing out and you're in that kind of environment. But the bigger issue is it's just not good for voters.
Sydney artist Abdul Abdullah has won the 3,000 Packin room at the annual Archibald Prize this year. The Archibald Prize in Australia, portraiture art prize for painting. It's been seen as the most prestigious portrait prize in the country. Mr. Abdullah's portrait of a multidisciplinary artist, Jack Fu, sitting astride a horse, won him the Packing Room Prize, which is judged by 3 representatives of 40 employees at the Art Gallery of New South Wales. There are 57 finalists for the final Archibald Prize this year. Portraits of several celebrities are also on the finalists of awards, including actor Nicole Kidman and her sister Antonia, activist Grace Tame, and comedian Aaron Chen. The overall Archibald Prize winner will be announced May 9th. Simon Patterson has told a Victorian court that he and his estranged wife, Erin Patterson, who was accused of murdering his parents and aunt, continued taking overseas holidays together even after their separation. Speaking from the witness box at the Latrobe Valley Courts of Morwell, Mr. Patterson described their marriage as up and down, detailing multiple breakups between 2007 wedding and their final split in 2015. Erin Patterson, who is 50 years old, has pleaded not guilty to 3 counts of murder over the deaths of Mr. Patterson's parents, Ian and Gail Patterson, and his aunt, Heather Wilkinson, after serving them poisonous mushrooms during a family meal in 2022. She also denies attempting to murder Ian Wilkinson, a local pastor who became critically ill but survived. An exhibit featuring the world-famous Terracotta Warriors is being brought to Australia next month. More than 225 Chinese artefacts, including the Warriors, will be hosted in June at the Western Australia Museum Bula Bardip in conjunction with the Shanxi Cultural Heritage Promotion Centre and the Emperor Qin Shi Huang Mausoleum Museum. The pieces are from a period in history where China was unified under Emperor Qin Shi Huang. It's understood most of the objects have never been seen in Australia before. Nearly half never left China, and some more recently excavated pieces. Officials have confirmed there is currently a shortage of some medications used to treat ADHD. The Therapeutic Goods Administration has identified several brands, including Genesin Xilang and Teva Pharma's Concerta and AFT Pharmaceuticals Ritalin LA, has been impacted. The regulator has approved a supply of overseas registered Concerta tablets to reduce impacts of shortages, but it also says the shortage could last until the end of the year, forcing more than 1 million Australians to pay more in substitutes. In today's weather, Friday 2nd, Perth is cloudy at 26, Broome is sunny at 35, Alice is also sunny at 23, Darwin is mostly sunny at 33, Thursday Island is having showers at 29, Cairns also showers at 29, Townsville you're seeing showers or two at 27, Sydney showers at 21, Newcastle also showers, it's a wet country, at 22, Melbourne is sunny at 21, Adelaide is sunny at 23, and Hobart is cloudy at 17. And that's all for the news for NITV Radio. In In the last election, talk of First Nations affairs was everywhere, with Labor's campaign featuring promised implementation of the reforms described in the Uluru Statement from the Heart. The first step was Voice, a constitutionally enshrined advisory body on First Nations affairs. While Labor did keep their promise to hold a referendum, it was defeated in late 2023. Since then, the major parties have taken a different approach to addressing First Nations affairs in their election campaigns.
Yeah, it's been completely absent from any of the campaigning from both sides of the major parties. And that's quite deliberate. They're both steering away from it because they don't want the failure of the referendum tarnishing any of their potential chances at the election. So Labor has seemingly walked away from the Uluru Statement from the Heart. No mention has been made of the other two principles of the statement, such as truth-telling and treaty. The coalition's response has been an assumption that the Australian public does not support Indigenous rights.
That's Bartholomew Stanford, a Torres Strait Islander man from Masig Island and senior lecturer in Indigenous Studies at James Cook University. Labor has pivoted to economic policies, preferencing reforms for programs to increase employment and Commonwealth procurement funding for First Nations environmental ranger programs and general policy, such as an increase in urgent care clinics. The Coalition's core Indigenous policy is a promise to audit Indigenous expenditure and address what they call wasteful spending. They have created a new role for government efficiency, reflecting moves by the Trump administration in the United States. Dr. Stanford believes both sides of the government have failed to address key issues affecting First Nations people and fulfilling Indigenous rights, including not implementing the United Nations Declaration Rights of Indigenous Peoples.
Australia is falling well behind other settler nations and is not meeting basic international standards, which is really undermining any genuine attempts of reconciliation in our country, while also tearing at the fabric of Australia's national identity.
These tensions can make election time stressful for First Nations communities and community-controlled organisations, says Catherine Little, CEO of SNAKE, a leading organisation for First Nations children and family.
What we're interested in is policies that make a difference, policies that show that governments are actually doing what they need to do, and that is listening to communities. So we know that come election times, for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, it's often a really anxious time because we know that the conversation and the policies very often become a really quick race to the bottom.
First Nations communities experience distinct challenges that are often overlooked by policy, as reflected in the reporting from Closing the Gap, which does find that only 4 out of 19 targets are on track. It's yet another source of frustration and anxiety for First Nations voters. Meanwhile, the Australian Electoral Commission has started to send out mobile polling teams who go to almost 500 remote communities across Australia. Many are First Nations communities. One of these communities is Perlang Impi in the Tiwi Islands at the top of Australia. Like many remote communities, they face challenges such as overcrowded housing, limited access to health services, and badly maintained infrastructure like roads. NITV's Josh Van Staden travelled to the Tiwis to look into the issues for these communities. He spoke to community members who still advocate for voting.
But it's good for us to vote, you know, because then we can hear about what's going on.
And what's going to happen,
what needs to be done.
Yeah, what needs to be done.
Perlang Impi sits in the seat of Lingjiari, an electorate named after the trailblazer for Indigenous land rights, Vincent Lingjiari. It is also the electorate with the highest proportion of First Nations voters. The seat is currently held by Marion Scrimgeour, a Tiwi and Amintji woman and Labor member. When interviewed by Carla Grant for NITV's Living Black this month, Ms Grimjaw said her constituents were devastated by the result of the referendum and would advocate for truth and treaty.
And they wanted to be able to say to governments, let us drive this policy debate, you know, let us be in, to be able to make the decisions and to work with government to try and get a better outcome for our communities.
So what do you say that a re-elected Labor government should do about treaty and truth-telling?
You know, Carla, it's not up to me to say what a re-elected government, but certainly as a re-elected member in Lingiari, I will do everything that I can as the local member to elevate those voices.
While Dr. Stanford welcomes the support for truth and treaty from Ms. Grimjaw, he also cautions voters to consider whether parties are likely to support the values of their local members when it comes to First Nations affairs. He also says the same critical thinking should be applied to voting for minor party and independent candidates. Ms. Little also provides some advice for voters for election day and into the next term of parliament.
One of the beautiful things about elections is it doesn't matter who you vote for, you have the ability to use your voice and you have your ability to lean into whoever it is you're going to vote for and say, behave better. You are politicians. You have incredible structural and institutional power. So urge your politicians to step up. That is investing in the policies that make a fairer and more equitable society for all Australians.
That story brought to you by Phoebe McWraith for SBS News and Josh Van Staden for NITV, produced by Nari Pakai for NITV Radio. You're listening to NITV Radio. Today we're joined by rising star who's already making her mark on the world of music, theatre and dance. You might recognise her last name, and yes, talent definitely runs in the family. But she's carving her own path that's all her own. Zipporah Anu is a proud young creative whose journey into the performing arts has already seen her grace some of Australia's biggest stages, from NCG at the AFL Grand Final to powerful theatre productions like Warangetsa and Boranga's Horizon. With a growing resume that includes choreography, acting, singing and even radio hosting, Zippy is a powerhouse in her own right. NITV Radio's Luana Grant caught up with Zipporah to talk about her creative upbringing, her inspirations, and the exciting journey she's on.
Hello, my name is Zipporah Corsa Anu. I'm a proud Saiwa Island woman, and my clans are the Samu people, which is the Cassowary people, and then the Sui people, which is the Black Wing Stilt. My connections are Saiwa through my aka, and my ape was born on Mabiog Island. So I have connections to Mabiog as well.
And thank you so much for joining me today on NITV Radio. I'm really excited to have a yarn with you and get a little deep dive into like how you grew up and, you know, just about your career. So first of all, I just wanted to start like at the beginning. Can you tell us what it was like for you growing up and where did you spend most of your childhood?
I grew up, in a lot of different places just because of my parents' work. So I did, you know, a little bit in Melbourne in kindergarten and in year two. And then I was born in Sydney, so I did a little bit in Sydney as well, but predominantly was actually Wollongong. I feel like I love the water. I'm such a water girl.
Mm.
But I guess you get a lot of resilience when growing up in different environments and moving about. So I had to learn how to make new friends and, you know, how to kind of be a chameleon in different spaces and different places. I kind of learned a lot of, you know, skills being so flexible and moving all the time as a kid. And that's really scary for kids sometimes. You know, a lot of my childhood was also in trailers or in dressing rooms or in, you know, at mum and dad's work, which is, you know, sets and theatres and things like that. So that also was a massive part of my childhood as well.
Mm, and like you mentioned, like you come from a very talented family. Your mum is the iconic performer Christine Arnoux and your dad is an actor, Roger Corsa. What was it like growing up with parents in the spotlight for you?
You know, it's a very, very different kind of childhood to what a lot of kids would experience. And I think a lot of people romanticise having famous parents. But the reality is, you know, mum and dad are out working hard to, you know, to earn a living for you. And just being, you know, having, that's their jobs.
Mm.
So I guess a lot of my childhood was, you know, watching mum and dad on TV or seeing them in their spotlight rather than, you know, at the parent-teacher days or, you know, at the canteen. But I used to love when mum was available to come and do canteen day because I got a little bit jealous that everyone else's mum was able to do that.
Growing up, having, you know, creative parents, how did that influence your own passions, like for the arts?
Well, you know, I didn't really want to do anything else. Like, I came out of the womb singing and dancing, and it was more so that mum and dad had to shut me up rather than encourage me. It was never really a thing that, you know, they encourage. Of course they're encouraging of anything that I do, but they weren't pushing me to do it. I just naturally gravitated towards, you know, dance and singing and the stage in general.
And was there anything else along the way that you enjoyed doing, or was music and performing always your passion and what you only ever saw yourself doing?
Oh, I mean, I grew up more with a dance influence. I wanted to be in Bangarra because, you know, not only mum was in it, pretty much all of my family, all of, you know, mum's cousins, her uncles and aunties. And I wanted to be solely a dancer until I had a hip reconstruction when I was about 16. It kind of stunted that dance journey. And so I had to kind of think of another thing. But I always knew that I loved singing. I just gravitated towards dance more. But no, I was pretty much predominantly for the stage. You know, I idolized Michael Jackson and Beyonce and, you know, all the greatest performers. And I couldn't really see myself doing anything else except for being a chef. I love cooking.
Oh, and what's your favourite thing to cook?
Oh, my God, anything. I loved baking as a kid. That was more my thing. Is that mum would always growl me for leaving the kitchen untidy, and she'd wake up on a Saturday morning and I'm trying to cook something or bake something, and she just was like, oh, my God, kids, can you just leave the kitchen tidy for one morning, please?
Yeah, I think that's the most unfun part about baking or cooking, is having to do the cleaning up.
Oh, 100%. I'd hate to be a cook, a chef, a baker for those reasons.
And has your mum and your dad ever given you any advice that's really stuck with you about navigating the industry?
I think, you know, heads down, bums up, you know, really stay with your craft. You know, my grandmother used to say, the emptiest vessels make the loudest sound. You know, really keeping that humbleness about yourself is one thing that mum always teaches me, is that, you know, there's no point in telling everyone else your business because, you know, they might steal your secrets or your, you know, different tips and tricks. But it's definitely to be true to who you are and always keep your wits about you too. And, you know, really keeping to your craft and making sure that you're a better performer or better in general every day, instead of, you know, focusing on what other people are doing.
What's it like performing, you know, alongside your mum? Last year you both performed at the AFL Grand Final at the MCG in front of, like, 100,000 people. It's massive. What was going through your mind even, like, on such a massive stage, and also being able to sing with your mum such an iconic song as well?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty scary week. We'd come from a riding camp up in Brisbane, and I ended up getting laryngitis. If you know what laryngitis is, it affects your vocal cords directly. It's nothing else. And I can specifically remember waking up one morning going, this doesn't feel quite right. Going, like, running to the doctor going, oh, my gosh, you have no idea. I have one of the biggest performances of my whole life, you know, the 22 years of my life. But I was like, I cannot not sing at this. Like, this is so important. So had to quickly get on vocal steroids so I could actually sing, because I completely lost my voice.
Oh, so scary. Like, worst timing ever.
Oh, the worst timing ever. And I've never had laryngitis before. The first time was me performing at the AFL Grand Final in front of 100,000 people. And that was just an added pressure to the already immense thought of performing at the MCG.
And what was it like? You sung with some kids, like a choir as well, that sung with you guys. What was it like being able to perform with, you know, the younger kids, and, you know, they probably looking up to you as someone who, like, they probably aspire to be when they get older? What was it like being able to sing with them?
Well, Well, I, you know, from the minute that we had that rehearsal with them, it was all so fast. Everything was happening, you know, a million miles a second. And I just made sure, and Mum and I made sure that we really had that connection with them. And it wasn't us and them, rather, you know, it was us all together. And, you know, we're one mob representing our people on one of the biggest stages in our country. I really wanted to make sure that they felt a part of it just as much as, you know, Christine Arnoux. They would have been, you know, scared out of their mind because we all looked around the stadium going, oh my gosh, this is a massive stage. So I really wanted to, you know, make it known that we were all standing all there together singing the one song as one big family.
Mm, and Katy Perry was there, like massive, massive performer. What did you get to meet her?
Yeah, I did get to meet her. It was, you know, at least for 5 seconds. And it was cool because she was obviously the lady of the day. But she was lovely. She was very cool. When I was younger, I loved her first her debut album, which was One of Your Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought she was just the coolest. And she's PR trained and everything. So it's like every single question that she got asked was so well said and so well put. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, she is just, you know, so trained. She's been doing this for ages, but she's really, really lovely. She's so cool.
And who else did you look up to, like, when you were younger? What other singers did you love and the type of music that you would listen to?
Oh, I mean, I grew up with a whole bunch of different influences, you know, ranging from reggae to rock to even, you know, church music. What else? Country, obviously. All blackfellas grew up with country.
Yep.
but, you know, I always gravitated towards, like, R&B. Soul, like, you know, I grew up with Aretha Franklin being one of my biggest, you know, inspirations. And I think Beyonce, because she was, you know, she so perfectly puts together the art of performing. So it's not just, you know, one singular aspect. She's a singer, she's a dancer, she's an actor. She really, you know, is able to embody all of those things so perfectly. So that's why I love her so much. But also, you know, Michael Jackson, like everyone else, had a Michael Jackson fave in their kids. But I just, you know, I love them too specifically because they embody what a true performer is, which is well-rounded. And they just, yeah, I was so encaptured by them as a kid.
And a couple of years ago, you performed in the Warringah Theatre production as part of the Warringah Festival. Can you tell us what that production was like for you to be a part of and what it meant for you to be a part of that that theatre production?
I'm really close with the Johnson family. You know, they're just one of my family, really. And they just asked me to be a part of it. And it was probably one of the first proper storytelling moments on stage where you're in the whole entire story. You're sat down. You know, we spoke with a lot of Wiradjuri elders and were throughout the whole process, and Kerry Johnson is such a visionary. And, you know, I was really proud to be a part of something that is so close to the Johnson family, because obviously their family is from, you know, Warringah to the Mission, and being able to be so amongst it really helps you with the story. And, you know, being able to go down to Warringah, the Mission itself, you know, puts it all into perspective, because we first did the run of the production up here in Sydney, and then being able to take it down to Warringah was even better.
And last year you were also part of Bangarra's Horizon. What was that like working with the company? And you mentioned before that was something that you always wanted to do. And what capacity was were you working on that production, Horizon?
So Sunny Ray Townsend is my cousin, and he was part of that three-part billing, the Horizon. And so his part was telling the storyline of his people. So we're related through our Samu line, which is the cassowary line.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into the totemic systems and talks about totemic systems in his work. And so he asked me to do the soundtracking for the beginning bit. So, you know, I just spoke in Kalau Kawawia, which is our Saiwai language. And, yeah, no, we just did a bit of voiceover work for that and a little bit of a sing. And the translation was done by our auntie, Leonora Adidi. So that was really cool to be able to sing in language and work so closely with family.
And what does it mean for you to not only work with family but sing in your language and, you know, represent your culture in that way?
I think it's really, really special, and it's a privilege to be able to speak in language because, you know, I understand and acknowledge that not everyone is going to be able to have that opportunity in their lives to be so deeply rooted and connected to language and to culture in general. So I see it as a really massive privilege and honour to be so closely linked and have culture at my fingertips that I'm really, really, you know, I'm lucky and I'm so grateful for it every day. And it brings a whole other meaning to storytelling because you know exactly what you're talking about and you know exactly, you know, who you're singing it for. And, you know, Mum raised me and my brother to know who we are and who we come from, more importantly, and, you know, speak the very phrases that our ancestors would have. Because our languages are the oldest languages in the world, you transport yourself hundreds of thousands of years to the beginning, and then you're uttering those same words. So I think it's really, really...
Yeah, it's very powerful. And earlier this year, you also performed at Black Power House. What was the vibe like at that event? Because I went to not the one this year, but the year before, and it was, like, insane. It was so cool, like, all the mob there. What was it like for you to be a part of it this year?
Yeah, well, I hosted last year with Outback Tom Forrest, and that was a completely different ball game to actually performing on the stage. And I feel like, you know, just each year it keeps getting better and better and better. And no, this year was amazing. The turnout, I did not expect everyone to rock up, but it was really cool seeing the three different levels at the Manning Bar. It was just such a perfectly put stage and people trickling in from Yarvan. It just was such an amazing vibe.
And you've also been doing some hosting on Triple J. What's it like doing, you know, radio? And you've got your fingers in a lot of pies, like, and it's really cool because you've, you know, so talented and that you can actually, you know, host on Triple J. What's your drive for storytelling and being able to work in radio?
I don't know, honestly. It just kind of was something that came up. There's a co-host with Nookie about 2.5 years ago. It's almost going to be 3 years this year because it was 2022. Mm. And I can't believe how fast it's gone. And, you know, Nookie's given me quite a few amazing opportunities and I'm really grateful for him and his, you know, connections and wanting to help younger generations and young mob coming through. And after that, I think they just kind of went, she must be good. I've got no idea. But, no, I think radio is such a different craft because you have to be able to connect with people who can't see you. And I think in our generation, in our day now, everyone's so obsessed with their screens and needing to get that fixation visually, whereas the art of radio, you have to be able to capture people just by listening.
But I also wanted to ask you, if you could collaborate with anyone, who would it be and why?
Collaborate in what form?
In a music sense.
Now, how wide do you want me to dream with this?
As wide as you want to go.
Well, I mean, I think being realistic is obviously very important, but also being able to dream is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
I think collaborating with, you know, peers is really, really important because it's not just about, you know, you getting something out of it. You collectively get things out of it. You learn stuff from people who are in your industry. So when I worked with Kanina, we didn't really necessarily work together, but I opened for her. And to be able to do that, I'm learning from her. I'm seeing how she performs. And then, you know, she commented on things about my set. So that kind of collaboration is amazing, being able to put on a show together. But then I guess in terms of writing, I admire a whole lot of writers. Like I think Jem Cassidaly is an incredible writer. I think, you know, God, who else can I name? He is not an incredible writer. I think being able to capture story through song is a very, very old and ancient practice that we've been able to master. So, you know, I'd love to collaborate with, you know, all of the mob of my generation, to just because we're so good. But, you know, over in America, obviously, I've got my icons. If I said Beyonce, I think people would say that I'm delusional. But, you know, there's a lot of up-and-coming R&B writers. One specifically, Leon Thomas, who has done a lot of ghost writing throughout the years. Like, he's written for SZA. He's written for a lot of big artists, and now he's getting a lot of recognition by himself. But he's a multi-instrumentalist. He's an amazing singer, amazing songwriter, and even more producer. He just did his whole entire album himself, which I just think is such an admirable skill to have, because a lot of people nowadays are wanting that quick fix. Like, you know, I'm only doing one thing and I can't be bothered to learn another. So I love people, artists who are able to produce themselves as well.
And you just mentioned there Miss Kanina, who I just love her music. What was it like to open for her?
Well, she really brings the essence of political music. And, you know, political music has been in our, you know, community since the 70s, so even since the 60s, but more so it started to come into popularity in the 80s with, you know, No Fixed Address, you've got Rumpy Band, you've got Yotti Yindi. All these bands were so prominent because they were able to tell political stories. And why I love Kanina is because she brings that to now, to 2025. And I think people love her because of the energy that she's able to bring and the stories she's able to tell, because she's so ruthless. She's so articulate as well, is that people just love her raw and truthful storytelling and performing. So, you know, I idolise her and I love watching her because she is just so authentic to herself and really doesn't care what other people say. Like, you know, she'd think that, well, you'd think that, you know, women are told to be a certain way, where she does whatever she wants. And I love seeing her go on tour with Amel and the Sniffers. They're such a political band as well, and it just was able to meld perfectly, and I loved watching her do that. But, you know, I think Kanina is just so important to our music scene right now, and she's making waves not only in our, you know, black community, but in the wider community as well, and I'm so glad she's getting the recognition she deserves.
Yeah, she's very staunch and she's very unapologetically her, and we love her here at NITV Radio. And I definitely want to get her on as well for a chat, because she would be amazing to chat to, because she's got a lot to say. And yeah, she's amazing, amazing performer.
Exactly.
Who inspires you in your life personally and professionally?
Who inspires me? You know, I think anyone who's able to wake up and produce art inspire me. I think we're getting into we're becoming a world where art is not important anymore, and it's being overshadowed by the policies of the world and the destruction. Anyone who's able to wake up and unapologetically be themselves and make art, I look up to them and I'm inspired by them, because making art right now is so hard. I think people always underestimate the ability to speak truth and to write down thoughts. People don't realize how hard that is. And I wake up every day going, oh, maybe I don't want to write a song, maybe I do. It comes at the most random of times. But people who are able to put it into a routine and, you know, write something every day or create something every day are such important human beings. And they're a dying breed. People who are able to produce art so effortlessly and so truthfully are a dying breed. I also look up to mothers, single mothers, because the strength that comes from them is, you know, it's not talked about often. And, you know, women in the arts at the moment, you know, I'm discovering that the most well-known of artists are actually single mothers. I found out that Keita Alexander, who opened for Dua Lipa the other week, she's a mother of two. And no one would have known that, because, you know, she has such a successful career. And to know that she's also a mother is, I think, so amazing.
And finally, my last question, are there any exciting projects that you're currently working on or any upcoming performances that you can fill us in on or that we should be keeping an eye out for?
Well, I've got a few things in the works, a few things that I can't quite say anything about now, but what I can tell you is I've got music coming out very, very soon. I'm currently tying up loose ends, recording last bits.
But, very exciting.
Coming, finally.
Yeah, very exciting. And it was amazing to chat to you today. And thank you so much for your time. I know you're super busy.
Anna.
So I appreciate it. And hopefully we can get you in the studio soon.
Yes,
and you could do some co-hosting with me and maybe do some performances. I think that would be really awesome because, that'd be cool.
I'd love that to see.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much and I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.